Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome. How are you today? Here we are with another episode of MTG Pro Tutor, and I'm so excited to be with you again. As you know, the last couple weeks I've been out of town visiting family. It's been fun, but it's also really nice to be back getting into a regular schedule again and just doing this fun stuff with you. So last episode, I went on and on and on about the pre-release and how it's this weekend, how excited I was, and obviously I had my wires crossed because this weekend is the release. Obviously, we did the pre-release last weekend. I wish I could have participated, but it was my sister's wedding, so the most I did was go and buy a pre-release box. I got a combustible Gear Hulk for my pre-release card, and other than that, my box didn't really have any cool rares, but I still look forward to putting together a sealed pool and, you know, just kind of flexing that muscle. So this weekend, starting today, actually, Kaladesh is legal in Standard. So I don't know exactly what I'm going to be doing with my Standard deck, but it will need some tweaking for sure. I really don't have any Kaladesh cards yet, so we'll just see what happens at Friday Night Magic tonight. But what are you going to try out? There are a lot of new strategies. I would love to hear what you're doing, what you're excited about, and how you are incorporating Kaladesh into your builds. Really, the best place for these kinds of discussions is in our MTG Pro Tutor Prodigy Facebook group. So you can go to mtgprotutor.com/Facebook group, and you will be able to join right there. It's a great place, a fantastic community where you can talk about card ideas, deck ideas, what you like, what you don't like, just kind of general magic discussions. There are some amazing people in there, and I really love interacting with all the prodigies there. Speaking of prodigies all around the world, if you are as excited about our community as I am, there are Pro Tutor t-shirts that are available. I have them, and now that I'm back from vacation, I can send them out. I've already fulfilled the orders for everyone who pre-ordered them, but they are here, ready to go. So go to mtgprotutor.com/t-shirts, and you can purchase one there. We have two styles, a Depart Every Plane Victorious shirt and a Hero Among Planeswalkers shirt. The front has a cool MTG Pro Tutor logo, and the back has one of those two phrases. I have some of all sizes available, and I even have women's cut shirts as well. So, mtgprotutor.com/t-shirt is where you can go to get your hands on one of those. So, that's it for the top of the interview stuff. Like I said, back in town, super excited for Kaladesh, and really excited to connect with you. So now, let's bring in our fantastic guest today. Sit down and talk about magic. What is up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a relatively new player who started playing in Fate Reforged. Grand Prix Portland was his first Standard Grand Prix, his second Grand Prix ever, and at Grand Prix Portland, he made top 8. He works at CCG House and has been going to sleep every night a little bit better at Magic than he woke up that morning. Coming to us from Vancouver, Washington, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Chris Botello. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, Sean, and thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
I most definitely am.
Excellent, excellent. Now, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Chris, the best place to do that is probably Facebook, because he is not on Twitter. But you can reach out to him, say hello, and ask questions, because he knows a lot about Magic, and we're ready to dive right in and talk about it. So, Chris, we love to learn a little bit about our guests, get to know them better outside of Magic. So we mentioned in the bio that you do work at a card house or a card shop, but what else do you have going on? Are you going to school? Do you do any work besides that? Tell us a little bit about you.
Right now I am going to school, though if the Pro Tour ends up going well enough, I might put that on hold for a while. We'll see. That would be the ideal.
Yeah.
But won't plan too far ahead for now.
And what are you going to school for as of right now?
A computer science
degree. Okay, excellent, excellent. Sweet. And that's up there in Washington?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So doing a little bit of school. And you only child, you have siblings that you get to play with, or what does that look like?
One younger sister who probably couldn't be too much less interested in Magic.
All right. Not bad, not bad. Excellent. So, got a younger sister that you don't play Magic with, but that's okay, doing the school thing. And then, obviously, we mentioned that you're working at a card shop and into Magic, and that's great. So, we would love to hear your story, your origin story. Can you take us back and tell us the story of the very first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards?
The very first time I ever saw or played with Magic cards, I think, was when I was about 10. It was a Boy Scouts camping trip. Not actually me being in Boy Scouts, but a friend invited me to go along with them. And one night, one of the guys pulls out like 6 decks, and we have a giant 6-person free-for-all, and I have no clue what I'm doing. And honestly, I couldn't tell you a single one of the cards that was in there. I just remember that I felt like Lana War Elves was the most broken thing that I had ever seen in a game.
That's awesome. Because it's not a bad card.
No, it's still good today.
Yeah, sure is. So do you remember what set that was?
I've been trying to remember that for a long time, and I couldn't tell you. I know for sure it was something with Llanowar Elves,
but that's
about as good as I can do.
Oh, man, that's awesome. So going to a camp out trip with a friend, and they bust out some decks, and you guys just sit around and play. And that's the first time you ever saw it, but you don't have any idea what you're playing. That's so fun, you know, our first interactions. And then you really came in, we mentioned, in Fate Reforged. So would you consider that your first set?
Probably. That was the first time I ever probably played Magic actually knowing what the rules are. And the story behind that's kind of funny, actually. I got an interview with Wizards of the Coast for a customer service position. And I remember one of the questions was what about protection did. And I forgot like half of the things that it did. And I ended up not getting the position. But I felt so silly over missing this question on a thing I had studied for a couple of days before that I decided, well, I want to make sure that doesn't happen. I'm going to practice some magic because at this point I didn't know I hadn't gotten the position. And I'm going to study up and, you know what, I'm going to become a rules advisor. Why not? And so I did. And then I decided to go to a pre-release. And Fate Reforged was really the first thing I had ever super done. And, oh, wow, why do you know? This game's actually pretty fun and interesting. I think I'm going to try playing it a little more regularly.
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome. That is so awesome. So you were applying for a customer service position at Wizards to support a game that you hadn't even played?
I had played it a couple of times, but again, not 100% sure I knew what I was doing. And I had a friend who worked at Wizards, so I was definitely interested in the position because I knew a lot about the company and what they did. I was more familiar with D&D than Magic at that point, but that's probably not the case anymore.
So this was customer service for all things Wizards, not just Magic?
I think the position itself was just for Magic because my friend was, I think, website design for Magic at that point.
Oh, cool. Now, I don't know if you would know this. If you would have gotten that job, would you have been allowed to, would you be under the same restrictions of competing as the R&D people are? Or would you still be allowed to go to Grand Prix and things like that?
I know that those positions or that the enforcements on those positions have changed a little bit in the last couple of years, so I'm not entirely sure. I definitely wouldn't have been as interested knowing that I couldn't go to any super high-level stuff.
Okay, so even as a customer service rep, you're not allowed to go to...
My understanding is that it's any affiliate of the company directly.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because then the story would be, Wizards employee wins the Pro Tour or something like that, and everyone would be like, what? Oh, he's a customer service rep. He doesn't ever see the cars. Be like, doesn't matter. He's a Wizards employee. So, yeah, well, that's interesting. So by not getting the job, in that little window where you weren't sure if you got it or not, you're like, you know what? I'm gonna research this a little bit more. And then, well, this is pretty fun. And then you didn't get the job. And because of that, you're able to compete, competitively. And here you are doing great things, making top eight. That's awesome.
Yep. I mean, not getting that job directly led to a couple of months later applying for a position at the CCG House, local card store here, and getting that position. And then it turns out that when you're at a card store 7 days a week for about 10 months straight, pick up a lot of stuff.
Pick up a few things here and there. That is so cool. What would you say is your favorite set?
My favorite set, I was mainly a limited player up until about probably Shadows. So I would say Dragons, but a funky version of Dragons where we did three Dragons and no Fate at all.
Oh.
3x Dragons was a lot better than two Dragons and a Fate.
Interesting. All right. Very cool. And along the same lines, what is your favorite card or one of your favorite cards?
Definitely still has to be Demonic Pact. Ooh. I don't think that's going to stop for a while.
So for those of us who don't know, what is that card? What does it do? And why do you like it?
Demonic Pact is a 4-mana enchantment that on your upkeep you choose one of 4 modes. The 4 modes are deal 4 damage to something, gain 4 life, draw 2 cards, and have your opponent discard 2 cards, all a fantastic source of value for 4 mana. And the 4th mode is that you lose the game, which normally would kind of suck, and I've been playing with this card since I think about Battle for Zendikar, and originally you were just looking for ways to get a ton of value and get rid of the pact, but Eldritch, was it Eldritch Mooner?
Yeah.
I think it was Eldritch. Eldritch Moon gave us Harmless Offering, which is an awesome way to turn the 4th you lose the game trigger into a win con by giving it to your opponent and having them lose.
There you go. That is so fun. Demonic Pact. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And you mentioned, you know, when you went to a pre-release, like, hey, this is pretty fun. I think I'll stick around. What was fun about it? Why is Magic fun for you, Chris, and why do you keep playing?
I think what I found was that there were all of these new people I had never really played with and didn't know anything about. And I actually got to connect with them, talk to them about the game, what they were doing, how they were as a person, and had a ton of fun. And most of my experience with other players and games up until that point had been kind of characterized by the internet. I wouldn't say getting to know somebody on a nice level and socially connecting was a staple of the majority of internet games. So it was a really nice change for me, and I found I loved it.
Excellent. So that's that human element, like you said, a lot of internet games aren't characterized by the, of course, you know, the face-to-face interaction and then getting to know people. And so that really drew you in, and you like that about the Magic community.
I had played StarCraft II a lot, and I'll probably end up bringing a lot of connections back to that because there were a lot of elements about self-improvement and how to get better at a game that I think StarCraft II taught me rather to a T. And that kind of exemplifies the whole, you didn't get too many positive interactions with people on StarCraft II.
Hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. So what was an aspect of Magic that you were terrible at when you first started, but that you eventually overcame?
Oh, I spent about 5 months trying to remember every single game that I shouldn't play my creatures pre-combat, tap out of a combat trick, and then swing. Which, I mean, that's something kind of everybody realizes is why you do that. It just took me so long to not be in the habit of it.
Playing creatures in the first main phase, therefore using up mana that could have been used in a combat trick during combat.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if I saw a creature, I knew that, oh, they're going to block with it. I want to use this combat trick.
Right.
I would hold the mana up. It was something like, not that it was this recent, but it's a good example, Woodcutter's Grid being a card that gives a creature hexproof, and thinking to myself, oh, I want to be able to counter a removal spell if they have it. Just didn't occur to me to play around things that weren't on the board.
Got it.
Learning to play around things that aren't on the board is a huge part of kind of getting better in predicting your opponent.
Yes. Yeah, and like you said, it's that's one of those early on challenges that once you kind of get over, you go, oh, wow, and you kind of understand the game, you know, a little bit better. Like you said, by leaving your mana up, even if you don't have a combat trick, it at least makes your opponent think that you do. You know, you want to give them as many decision points as possible because there's more options or more chance of them to choose the wrong one, right? And so then if they don't, you know, and then whatever they do, whether they block or don't, or, you know, you should have all that figured out. And then on your second main, you can play your creature, and it's just exactly the same as if you played it in main one, except for the fact that you used up some of your opponent's mental capacity for that game by having to figure out whether or not you had a combat trick or not. So, yeah, that's really cool.
Every time you're doing something and you think, oh, my opponent is going to do exactly the right thing, well, give them every opportunity ever to mess up.
Yes, yes. Now, you shouldn't, and I think that's a good habit to be in, to think your opponent's going to do the right thing, because it's those times where you're like, and sometimes you have to gamble, I guess, but where you're like, oh, I'm pretty sure he's going to make the wrong choice, and then they surprise you and they make the right choice. So you never want to be in that situation. You want to assume that they're going to make the right play, and then, you know, do everything that you can, like you said, to give them the option not to, and then sometimes they take that option.
Actually came up surprisingly often with the Demonic Pact deck, where your opponent has, like, Naturalize or some Disenchant analog, some instant speed way to blow up your pact, and it's the final turn before you're going to donate it. And you have left the discard mode for last because you're going to make them discard every card in their hand so that they can't blow it up after you Harmless Offering and get the one additional card worth of value. Well, I had a lot of games where the player would destroy my pact because they were about to discard their card, and I had no answer to the pact and was going to lose if they did nothing. But you just have to give them that option. And a lot of the times it saved me.
Very interesting. Okay, yeah. And you mentioned this a little bit earlier about when was the period of time, or when what period of time you feel really helped you level up as a player?
Well, actually, there's two periods specifically I can think of that I really got better. One was just as Magic Origin launched. And I decided I wanted to devote myself to figuring out how Sealed worked for the pre-release. And I think I spent about a full week after Spoilers finished doing practice fake Sealed pools And I think I ended up doing like 500 over the course of that week.
No, just building. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's great.
And so what I did was I just sat there and I generated a sealed pool, figured out what the best three decks were. And I didn't playtest these much. I think I did like three sets of, I'm going to playtest two versions of these decks against one another and see which does better. But mostly just practice, build sealed, and figure out what cards I was putting in constantly and what I was sometimes putting in. And I think that was the point where I really realized, oh, this kind of translates to draft. There's a real pick order here. I can learn ahead of time what cards I think are good instead of just picking based on synergy. Wow! And that was a tipping point in my ability to draft that really made me actually decent.
So that's really cool. Did you do that in a silo, or did you get any feedback from other people as you were building all these practice decks?
I was doing it mostly on my own and just iterating and iterating, and I was storing them, and I started comparing the ones that I did on like 4 days, 300x down to the ones I was doing at the start, and realizing, oh, wow, those decks I built at the start, I totally disagree with that. Wow, I have a totally different opinion of the cards now that I've kind of gotten an idea for roughly what the power and toughness of creatures is, and things like that.
So what were you, because that's fascinating to me, because I sometimes have a hard time just on my own, you know, figuring stuff like that out. So, because for me, it'd be very easy to like go through the motions and like open up 500 pools and put the decks together, but then really doubt or not feel, I mean, maybe I would after 500, I don't know, but just feel like I'm not really catching on without somebody external kind of giving me input, but that's like probably a block on my part. So what were you looking for? Like how were you able to make those connections, and what really kind of got you so that when you look back on your earlier pools, you're like, oh, wow, now I disagree. So what were some of the things that really stood out as you went through this evolution?
One of the things that I found was that you got an idea for what the typical playable creature was in the set.
Okay.
And I've seen a lot of people do analysis on like what's the average stats for creatures or the average toughness for creatures at each CMC in this set. And that's useful, but I mean, you're not always going to play a 1/4 for 3 mana and that's it. So that kind of doesn't give a very good picture. But if you find out, oh, a creatures with 2 power but not 3 power are super common in this set, suddenly that 2/3 for 3 vanilla can actually look pretty good. Hello, Origins. That mm-hmm. was the case.
Yeah, that is
things
true.
With 3 toughness suddenly looked super good. And things like, oh, wow, all these decks are playing hyper-aggressive 2-drops, and if I don't block a 2-drop, I'm probably going to lose. So Origins turned into, oh, I have to draft like 7 2-drops and have a 2-drop in my hand, or else I should probably mulligan. And that was one of the things I caught onto ahead of time that actually, I think, definitely ended up being the case in that format.
Huh, that is so cool. Love it, love it. And what was the other level-up period?
The other level-up period was actually testing for GP Portland. And I built this Demonic Pact deck, and I started playing it. And I found that I really, really enjoyed playing it, so I was testing it on Magic Online, and I found myself willing to test it way more often because I just super enjoyed the time I spent playing. And what I realized when I was doing that was, you know, about a week and a half in when I'm on League 20, and I've presumably played like 200 games, is that, wow, I'm still like 200 games deep and noticing new interactions and new lines of play I should be doing like every other game. Wow, there's a lot to be said about practice. And I mentioned StarCraft II earlier and how that kind of influenced me a lot. And StarCraft II taught me a lot about how useful practice is. I spent hours every day and finally got up to Masters in that, which is kind of decent. But StarCraft II had this kind of one-on-one notion. And one good thing I had think it had going for it for self-improvement that Magic kind of hides is that in StarCraft II, if you lost, it was your fault. There wasn't anything random. There was no luck of the draw you could really blame it on. It was, if you lost, you did something wrong or the other guy did something better. And so anytime you lost, you got to look at it and say, okay, what out of this can I improve on? Because I know there is something in this game that I can improve on. There has to.
Yeah, there's no excuse. Like, there's no fallback that you can blame it on.
Yep. And I don't think it's a secret. Everybody knows Magic has games where there was never a way you could win. But what I kind of took from StarCraft is, if you just pretend that it was always your fault and there was never any fallback to blame yourself on. You know what? It's not going to be true, so don't take it to heart, but that mentality is going to help you improve a lot. And once I started grinding out all of these games, I kind of realized, oh, wow, this really is true. I am going to improve this deck by playing more, no matter how much I play. And it's just a matter of put in more practice, get better at the deck.
That is really cool. I really like that that analogy or that crossover. And then you also mentioned how working at a store really helped improve, you know, you as well. What about that has really, you know, seeped in and helped you improve?
I spent a lot of time giving deck building advice to people because after a while I was one of the better drafters in the store, and that carries over a lot into deck building. And so I got an idea for a lot about identifying what decks are looking for. Like, okay, this is your theme. It might not be what I would go for, but it's what you're going for. So let's figure out how to make the deck serve its theme better. And you get these deck building principles like you should figure out how your deck is planning to win and evaluate how every card contributes to that game plan. Not just how it's good on its own, but how it's contributing to the whole. Because you can cut really good cards from decks that they're just not going to work for. And
that's true in any format.
Definitely.
Whether it's EDH or Modern or Standard, any format, so you basically start with how am I going to win, and then what cards best support that strategy.
Yep. I have played many a cube draft where I have cut amazing cards I would never consider cutting in a million years because it just really isn't how my deck's going to win. I can't play like a burn spell that goes to face in a deck that is going to be controlling until I get out an Ugin. I mean, that's kind of an obvious example, but sometimes you'll have like a creature that's designed to be kind of value-y, kind of mid-range. Like, Siege Rhino's amazing, and maybe I'm playing Abzan, but if I'm playing Abzan Walkers and Mono Board Wipes, maybe that's not the best card, even though power level-wise it's better than like this Oust or something.
Interesting. Man, I love it. That is so awesome. So as you have been playing Magic and improving as a player, is there a pro player, past or present, that you look up to or admire?
I am a huge fan of Caleb Durwald, and I watch his streams constantly. And what I find is that a huge portion of my motivation for Magic is how much fun I can get out of it, but also how much fun I can kind of get the people around me to have out of it. I want my opponent to be having as much fun as I am, so I always try to be polite and courteous and kind of just make the whole experience better for them. Not everybody's going to take it, but a lot of people do. And I've really noticed a similar mentality from him. So all the time I will spend watching his stream, and he's usually streaming every day, I kind of get that same feeling. And I just really respect that. Kind of motivates me to continue to do the same.
Excellent. I was going to ask, what about his style you like, and it's his friendliness towards his opponents? I mean, because I know also he's a really good, like, I respect him as a player as well. Like the Mardu Green deck that I loved a few standards ago, a friend said, hey, you would probably like this, and showed me his videos, and that's when I was first clued into him. So I really love that deck, just resonated with me. So I have, I like him on that regard because, he found me a deck that I loved. But then you also say that he's friendly and nice to his opponents, and so he has that kind of personal side as well.
Yeah, and I think that there's a trend I'm going to come back to, which is practicing more makes you better. And there's this old quote I've heard that I really love, which is, there's two ways to be great instead of good. One is to always want to practice, and the other is to learn how to practice when you don't want to practice. I try to be good at two, but one is kind of the pref, right? You want to practice, and that's going to make you better. So if you love playing Magic and you can find more ways to make yourself love playing Magic more by just making the whole experience even more socially entertaining, then you're going to want to play more, you're going to practice more, and you're going to be a better player.
Love it. Absolutely love it. So all of our journeys through Magic, we all have highs, we all have lows. That's something that we all have in common. You know, we win, we lose, we learn. But those specific highs and lows are unique to each of us. And so we would like to dive into two moments with you. The first one being your worst Magic moment. And what did you learn from that time? So tell us your worst Magic moment and what you learned from it.
Worst Magic moment is probably at the first GP I ever went to. And that was GP Vancouver 20, 2016, I think. Yeah, it was like February 2016. It was Oath of the Gatewatch sealed. And I'm doing pretty well. I'm 5-2, I believe. I know I had two win-ins going, and that sounds right to me mathematically.
Okay. Meaning you won the next two, you were good to go.
If I won either of the next two, I was good.
Got it. You had two win-ins. Okay, yes, got it. Okay.
And spoilers, I didn't win either. But both of them were these gut-wrenchingly close games where I can directly point both of the mistakes I made. The first match, I had a completely superior board presence. I've got a Kalidus out. He's got a ton of creatures. I've got a ton of creatures. Mine are all better. Half of mine fly. And I can just pick him to death over a couple of turns. And there's a few turns where I have the opportunity to like swing out, make him block with everything. And I can't think of a single combat trick in the format that really punishes me for that. I'm terrified of, I don't really even know what I was scared of. I just didn't want to be completely tapped out and leave no blockers for like a haste creature or something, I imagine. And so I'm picking him to death slowly over a couple of turns. And he's got this, I can't remember the name, but this green enchantment that makes a Scion token every turn and can sack to go get an Eldrazi. And so he's just sitting there biding his time while I'm slowly pecking him to death. And I'm like a turn away from killing him when at the end of my turn, he sacks this enchantment and goes and tutors for a Drowner of Hope. And he's got like 12 Scions in play. So he spends the next couple of turns tapping down my entire board of like 8 creatures and swinging casually. And there's nothing I can do about it.
Gosh.
And so if I had just been swinging all out, he would have been chumping like crazy with these Scions and he wouldn't have had anything. And instead of playing around the card, admittedly a rare, that I knew was in the set and I knew would hose me, I just wasn't thinking about it. I was playing to all of these imagined fears of, oh, what could go wrong if I'm completely tapped out? That's such a scary position to be in. And so instead of just trying to play for the quick win while I had the upper hand, I gave him the opportunity to come back. And that was a teacher of, you know what, that's not a good way to play Magic. Maybe you should play differently. And I have.
Were you familiar with the set? Like, did you, I mean, so you said you had these imaginary, you know, fears and stuff like that. Was it because you didn't know realistically what he could play?
I knew all the cards in the set. But at that point, I hadn't quite gotten the mindset of these are the cards I'm playing around. I had the mindset of these are the types of effects I'm playing around. So I was scared of some giant haster. But there isn't a giant haster in the set, so I shouldn't have been. And now I'm getting much better about actually predicting, okay, I'm scared of this card or these combinations of cards, not this effect. Because you can make yourself play around stuff that doesn't exist, just feeling like that's the safer option. In reality, maybe there's a different threat you should be worrying about.
Yeah, there you go. That's so true. And I mean, we need to catch ourselves. And I've done that too, actually just recently in a conspiracy draft. It was crazy. Like, you know, the board state was crazy. I had just ridiculous amounts of stuff on the board, but I wasn't attacking because, long story short, if I would have lost the Monarch, then my opponent would have gotten a whole bunch of stuff back. And I was just so afraid of him doing something that I didn't know, just some magical something rather to you know, get his, to deal damage to me, that I wasn't attacking him. And I just had tons of extra like tokens lying around that I could have just been, you know, swinging into the wind. And so long story short, we dragged the game out much longer than it probably should have been than if I would have just been attacking instead of, again, worrying and fretting over some imaginary or something that I didn't know existed. And just, I had to have been more confident in my situation to, you know, to push the advantage that I had. Similar to yours, if you were be pushing the advantage that you had, you know, you wouldn't have found yourself in a lockdown situation.
By all means, play around cards that actually exist in the set, but don't play around effects you're worried about if you can't think of a card in the set that actually doesn't.
Right. Excellent. So what was the other game?
The other game was the very awe-inspiring mistake of don't keep a hand without a 2 or 3 drop against a deck you just saw being aggro because you die before you play a creature.
Ooh.
And so that's not a mistake I'm going to make again.
Yeah. Rough. So we've kind of touched on them, but to wrap it up, what did you learn from that worst moment? What can the Pro Tutor Prodigies take away?
Play around cards, not effects. And constantly thinking about what cards your opponent's going to have, not what effects they can have. And then try to keep a more reasonable curve after you just saw your opponent was playing aggro.
Play around cards, not effects. Love it. Keep in notes because that was really, really good. So on the flip side are our highs and our proud magic moments. So tell us, what is your proudest magic moment to date?
That absolutely has to be the Grand Prix at Portland, the top eight.
Excellent.
The thing I took away most from that as a personal accomplishment was feeling how much of a correlation between practice and results there was. And I'm going to be way more motivated in everything I do in the future to put in as much practice as I physically can, because that is the correlation I saw. I practiced an insane amount, and I immediately got results that were obvious.
I love it, because I love diving into what you did leading up to that event. You've already said you were hundreds of games into that deck, you know, just playing a ton of sealed leagues. So how did you settle on that deck in the first place?
Yeah, whenever a new set comes out, I generally brew up somewhere between 10 and 12 decks, maybe two, I think. This could actually be competitive. And then a ton, I think, I want to play this. This is going to be fun. And so I played them, and they were fun. And I found this weird correlation where I was playing this Demonic Pact deck, and I was doing pretty well. I was at like a 55% win rate and was thinking, wow, this is like the first fun deck I've ever built that had a good win rate. And so at the same time, I was noticing, you know what? I'm making a ton of misplays, and I'm still doing well? What? Could this deck actually be carrying me? What happens if I get good at this deck? And I kept playing it and playing it, and my win rate got better and better. And eventually in like the competitive leagues, I was at a 70% win rate. And this was on like game 80, and I was still making mistakes with it. And that just ticked me off as, oh, wow, this fun deck I built actually might have some competitive value here. Let's find out what happens.
Wow, that is so cool. I love that. So I love how you brew and you just make stuff up and you say, hey, some of these might be competitive. A lot of them may be fun, but you still put the effort into that exercise of just squeezing those brain juices, those creative juices, and just seeing what comes out and putting fun stuff together. And then you start playing and some of them are fun and some of them end up having legs. And then you put more and more time into, you know, a few of them, start narrowing down the ones that you like. And then you found the one that you liked. And then you just, like you said, hundreds of games, like a ton of sealed leagues into it. And started practicing. And like you said, you had immediate payoff. Like, that is so cool. I think that's a great path that anybody can emulate. You know, just practice with a bunch of decks, find one that you like, and then practice a ton with the one that you pick.
Yep. And don't get super hung up on a single deck, because I am absolutely fanatically happy that Tap Pact ended up being the deck that was actually viable, because it was also the deck I was having the most fun with and the deck that the entire concept is cool. But Esper Brains didn't really end up working out. So I got to know when to drop them at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. So did you build all these decks online and try them all? Like, how, fiscally speaking, how would somebody emulate, you know, what you did? You just suck it up and buy every card and, you know, build every deck? Or how did you manage that aspect?
No, I did not. I did not build every deck. In fact, Cat Pact is only the second deck I've ever built on Magic Online.
Okay.
And what I did is I proxied a ton of these decks, and I spent a bunch of time playing them against one another.
Okay.
And then the few that kind of made it out of the gauntlet of self-play, I took to play with other buddies from the store.
Okay.
And the few that made it through that gauntlet without just like totally crashing and burning were, I think, I found that I actually enjoyed Bant, so I wanted to see how that was. And I found out that like Cat Pack was this deck that for some reason was doing way better than I expected, so I wanted to try that. And so I started playing Cat Pact in person just because I wanted to see if it could actually hold up at a tournament. And it did. And so at that point, I was like, well, GP Portland's coming up. I'm actually going to get this deck online and practice because that's the right thing to do. And I practiced, kept going, wow, this deck keeps getting better. And it ended up being probably the best investment of my life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No kidding, right? Because speaking about investment, you got the return when you made top eight.
Definitely.
Awesome. And so how long of a period of time are we looking at? Like, were you 2 months out from GB Portland when you started doing this, or a month out, a couple weeks? And then, like, I know it's not formulaic. I can't tell everybody, hey, 2 months out, put in 8 hours a day and you're going to make top eight. But for you, what did it look like? How many hours a day were you online playing or whatever? And how far out did this whole process start?
GP Portland was one of the earlier GPs this season, and I think it was about 3 weeks to a month after the set launched on Magic Online. And so I think I had about 3 weeks of serious Magic Online practice because I bought all the cards like 2 days after they actually officially launched and constructed leagues went up. So I think I put in about 3 weeks of playing every single day, 8 hours a day. I was doing, I think, like 15 matches of Magic on average every single day.
Wow, that's incredible. That is incredible. And on the, I guess, the technical side, how did you get the cards? Because I know sometimes people have questions, especially new Magic Online users, where do I get the ticks and what, do I trade and how do I get cards? So how do you actually acquire cards on Magic Online?
Well, previously my method of paying for stuff on Magic Online was to do drafts.
Okay.
And hope to do well enough to get some return on investment. You have to be really good.
Meaning winning more tickets than you put into it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the numbers break out as you have to have something like a 69, 68% win rate on Magic Online in order to break even on most of the draft queues.
Okay.
And so for months at that point, my life had been like, okay, expect to hemorrhage tickets a little bit quickly on draft leagues. Constructed leagues, I found, are much, much, much more lucrative. I walked away after testing Demonic Pack like 90 tickets higher than I started. And coming from a draft background, that is not something that ever happened. But when I was building it, I just had to pony up the money and put in a credit card. I think I just grabbed it all from MTGO traders.
Okay. So you found a trader, so MTGO trader. You just selected all the cards and just bought them like you would anything else.
A little boring.
Well, but it's good to hear that because people like me, like, I'm not that familiar with Magic Online. I know that a lot of the prodigies, I see questions pop up in the group every now and again about how to get tickets and where it feels kind of weird, and all this stuff. And so I just wanted to dive in that with you. And so basically you find a trader, in this case, MTGO traders, select all the cards, and then you just put in your credit card and buy it like you would at a store. And now you have it in your library, and then you make your deck, and then you go and enter sealed leagues and crush faces and top AGPs. Sounds good. Sounds good. That's awesome. I love that journey. I love hearing how people prepare for, their big events and whatnot. And because you top aided that Grand Prix, which Pro Tour are you qualified for?
I am qualified for Pro Tour Honolulu. So up here in October, hopefully I'll get some people rooting for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we love seeing past guests go off to do great things. So we will definitely be cheering for you for sure. And how many pro points did you get at the Grand Prix?
I got 4 from the Grand Prix, and luckily for me, that's the first Grand Prix this season, so we'll see if Rookie of the Year is something that might actually be doable.
Excellent.
It's silly to say now, but no.
No, hey, it's like you said, early on. And you get 3 just for showing up at the Pro Tour, so you're at 7, so that's pretty good. What other Grand Prix, what are your plans for this season? Like, where are we going to see you?
I'm probably going to try to travel to more Grand Prix, depending on how I do it. Maybe I actually have a respectable showing, maybe manage to do well enough to get invited to the next one, which I think is Aetherwold in Dublin.
Nice.
Sounds right to me. If that happens, I'm probably going to be spending a ton of time traveling to as many GPs as I can. For the practice, for the pro points, try to make a grab for Rookie of the Year. It feels like one of those things where if I don't do everything I can to try to make this dream that I've had never thought was possible until I managed to do rate of the GB. In reality, I'm going to regret for the rest of my life. So I'm going to kind of try to grasp this with both hands.
Good. That's awesome, man. Best of luck. That's really neat. And also meeting people and networking, because you want to be able to connect with other players, especially those who are going to the Pro Tour, so that you have an adequate group that you can prepare with, because it's like this catch-22 that I've found, especially with, players like you who have made their first top eight or whatever and going to the first Pro Tour. It's like, you need experience to get on a team for the Pro Tour, but then you kind of need a team. You don't need it, but it's better to have a team to do well at the Pro Tour, And so it's like, well, how do I get experience if no one will hire me thing, And so definitely by going, and I've heard that by going to events, just connecting and saying hi and asking players that you respect, their opinions on things and whatnot, and just kind of connecting with people, that's how some of these teams are formed, is through years of just interaction with these players and respecting each other and then getting together for big events. And so, yeah, I definitely encourage you to get out there and in addition to your Magic preparation, to be connecting with people so that you can set yourself up for that Rookie of the Year. I think that'd be so cool.
That's definitely good advice. Here I came coming on the show expecting to share my story. I'm the one getting good advice. I should probably be listening to your podcast.
Oh, man. Well, you know, you pick up a few things here and there after interviewing over 100 people. So, so let's see. We talked about your preparation for your Grand Prix and where you're going to take off from there. But one thing that we love to tap into is we know that we can't win every time, but we can learn every time. And you have played thousands of games by this point, especially with how deep you dove into Magic Online with the leagues and whatnot, both on sealed and constructed. So what is the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
I touched on this earlier, but I see so many players at my local shop kind of getting their ego really wrapped up in the game and wanting to feel like they don't make mistakes, wanting to feel like feeling like making mistakes makes them not a good player. And that's not true, because the best players in the world make mistakes, and you're going to make a mistake every single time you sit down to play a game of Magic. You need to divorce yourself from that and be able to look at every single game and say, I know I made mistakes here. Let me identify them, because getting good is the process of identifying mistakes and figuring out how not to make them again.
I love that. Look at every game and say, I know I made a mistake. What was it? And then what can I do to mitigate that in the future? Love it. Absolutely love it. And then turning it in on you, what are some of your shortcomings? What are you working on as a Magic player?
Right now, the thing I've noticed that I am most definitely trying to improve, and it's kind of something you can't do on Magic Online, so one of the reasons I'm playing more paper events, is that I don't think I bluff well enough. I'm the kind of guy who looks at his graveyard whenever he draws a delve spell. I'm the kind of guy who will sit there looking at my cards, considering what to do for like 30 seconds, and then pass the turn not doing anything.
So, I do that too,
I'm trying to get better at figuring out how to bluff, and that's a new skill for me that I haven't used in other games, so something that I'm really trying to develop.
Excellent. And then focusing that lens a little bit more and going a little deeper, what is the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
I think that would be my, I want to say willingness to improve, but that doesn't sound quite right. I'm very, very willing to admit fault whenever I do something and care more about improvement than about appearances, which, you know, I've noticed other people doing this, and I've done it from time to time. But being very, very humble about your skill, not trying to feel like you need to prove yourself as this person who doesn't make mistakes, I think that that has served me well. Because the StarCraft II background I came from, I had a bunch of friends who were grandmasters, were these great players, and I always viewed myself as worse than them. And so I got used to not feeling like I was letting myself down by making mistakes. And so I got comfortable with being the person who made mistakes as long as I was trying to fix them.
Interesting. That's great. That's really neat. And so what would you say is your best or your favorite format?
I think draft is by far and away the format I've got the most practice in. I do a ton of drafts. I try to draft multiple times every week, and it's definitely the format I feel the most experienced in, but Standard's been creeping up there. This whole new feeling of, if I just put in so much more practice than I ever do before, I can get the concept down, and that might be creeping up over it, but that's a new one for me.
Excellent. So let's see. When this goes live, I think we'll be at the pre-release for Kaladesh, but as far as draft goes with our current draft, is there an underplayed card in draft right now? Is there a card that doesn't get as much respect you feel in draft?
I do, actually. I think Make Mischief is criminally underrated by most players.
Okay.
This format has a plethora of one toughness creatures that are extremely good that you want to kill that are either one drops or two drops. I have ran decks with three of that card, and I've seen people cut every copy for just really bad filler, because one damage and a devil token isn't good enough. But it's kind of like a one damage spell attached to a 2/1 in a lot of ways.
And yeah, true.
If we were playing a format where, like Khans of Tarkir, where every creature started at 2 toughness or bigger, it would not be a playable spell. But it kind of like going back to doing a ton of sealed pools and figuring out what the average toughness of a creature was, this format has a ton of very, very good one toughness creatures, and that makes Make Mischief great. And I kind of gotten everybody who I've gotten to go on this kick of drafting Make Mischief and playing Mischief to agree with me. It's just not a card people normally give the light of day.
And what advice would you give to a brand new drafter? So let's say someone's coming in, and what is one beginner tip for a brand new drafter?
The biggest piece of advice I can give for somebody who's starting drafting is kind of the same one I would give to anybody playing a constructed deck. Evaluate how every card is going to help you win, and in order to do that, figure out what your game plan for winning is. Are you the deck that's going to flood the board fast and swing out, in which case your 6-drop 6-6 isn't right? That's not how you're planning to win, and so you shouldn't play it. But maybe this Expose Evil that's going to tap down your opponent's blockers to let you get in your last point of damage, maybe that's exactly what you need over, like, potentially the crazy Bomb Rare.
Now, a few more things as we pull into the home stretch here. Do you have any daily rituals or habits, they do not have to be Magic related, that you feel helps lead to your success?
I do, actually. It's not necessarily daily, but it's something I do every time a new set comes out. And originally, it wasn't by personal intent. It was by work. But we sort a ton of commons every single time a set comes out, just because the store needs to sell them. And so I end up sorting through, I think, like an average of 50,000 commons by the time all's said and done before a set launches. And it's actually amazing how much doing that lets me kind of figure out what the feel for a distribution of a card in a set is. And anybody can tell you, like, oh, no, the distribution of commons are this, the distribution of uncommons are that. But kind of going through and sorting through the cards and saying, well, this is about how roughly average they turn up, kind of just gives you a really good feel for the heartbeat of a format, and the commons are the heartbeat of every limited format.
Absolutely love it. And what Magic-related resources can you recommend to us?
I'm a really big fan of the Spikes subreddit on Reddit. There's a ton of people posting different deck lists, giving different ideas for things they think are viable. Not all of them are, you know, actually viable, but getting your hands on even bad ideas is cool because it can force you to reevaluate what you think. And maybe that idea doesn't work out, but maybe a spinoff of it does. And you kind of just get a ton of different people's inputs and let you sift through what you think is good and what's bad, and other people maybe have some better ideas than you. But it's kind of about getting your hands on all those ideas. I couldn't think of near like half of the stuff I do if I was trying to do it on my own.
Love it. So RSpikes, that's a good resource. Well, once again, Chris, we want to thank you for having on the show and say to everybody out there, if you want to connect with Chris, he's not on Twitter, so you have to find him on social elsewhere. So you can connect with him, say thank you, and ask him questions. Knows a lot about Magic. Chris, what is one last parting piece of guidance that you have for us? Either something that you've already said or something new that you want to emphasize here at the end.
Love Magic. The more you love it, the more you're going to practice, the better you're going to be. Find out how to make Magic more fun for you.
Chris, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise and sharing your time with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. As always, loved having you on the show. I learned a lot. And prodigies out there, if you want to get the show notes, you can go to mtgprotutor.com/Chris Botello. Look him up there and you'll get a synopsis of what we talked about, as well as links to any resources that he mentioned. And I would like to invite you, if you liked this episode, share it with a friend. We all have a friend who's grinding it out and wants to make it to the Pro Tour. Share this podcast with them, and they will thank you for it for sure. I'm super pumped about where this brand is going. I really want to help 1,000 prodigies make it to the Pro Tour. And the first step is getting the word out there, letting people know that this resource exists. So I super appreciate your help in spreading the word. Thank you so much. Well, that's it for today. Time to wrap up. Once again, Kaladesh is here. Let me know how you are incorporating these cards into your decks. Whatever format you play, I would love to hear which cards you like the most. I will definitely keep you in the loop as to which ones I will be using in Standard for sure. But until then, I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.